Myrtle Spear is still on the spot in the search to find the killer of Ray Hunt. However, in the last episode, Jack Arnold questions Mrs. Hunt. Her story contained several discrepancies about her movements the night of the murder. Mrs. Hunt was quite bitter about Myrtle and accused Jack of trying to protect her. She accused Myrtle directly and intimated she would do all in her power to prove her guilty of the killing. Now, in just a moment, we'll listen to today's episode of the story of Myrtle and Marge. It is the following morning at headquarters. Jack Arnold is telling Captain O'Toole the result of his talk with Mrs. Hunt. Captain O'Toole says,
"Well, Arnold, if you're so sure about Mrs. Hunt, why don't we take her into custody? You say she had every opportunity to leave the theater and come right back in again. According to you, she knew Pat was not in his office, and she had clear sailing to do the job."
"Well, I'm very suspicious of Mrs. Hunt, but I want to work this out my own way, O'Toole."
"Okay, we'll let that ride. Now, how about this mysterious young fellow that was hanging around the theater asking for Margie? How about this Spear girl giving him $50 and telling him to get out of New York and stay away? Looks pretty suspicious, doesn't it?"
"O'Toole, I know that boy had nothing to do with it."
"Arnold, are you trying to hide a witness?"
"Now, look here, you know better than that."
"All right, forget it. Darn funny where that gun went."
"What gun do you mean?"
"One that was put on the shelf down in dressing room 10.
"You don't think that gun is the one used in killing Hunt, do you?"
"Well, I'm not sure."
"Whoever killed Hunt carried his gun with him out of the theater."
"Well, I'm going to toss the Spear and Minter. They're waiting outside now."
"And I'm going over to my office. I'll be back later. Now, don't frighten those girls or two."
"There you go with your sentiment."
"Yeah, well, I'll see you later."
"Come on." "Joe, get Miss Minter in here."
"You're home again,
Captain." "Here, sit down, Miss Minter. Have you heard from this foster brother of yours?"
"No, I haven't, Captain."
"Well, now, Miss Minter, if we should find him, you wouldn't want us to accuse him of murdering Ray Hunt, would you?"
"Oh, no, Captain. Jimmy wouldn't kill anybody."
"Well, don't you think, Margie, that somebody could have hired him to kill Ray Hunt?"
"Oh, no, no. He's too much of a coward."
"Well, we know Myrtle Spear gave him $50 and told him to get out of town. Why should he be wanting to get him out of town?"
"So he'd stay away and not bother us."
"In what way would he bother you?"
"Well, he's always getting into scrapes."
"What kind of scrapes?"
"With gangsters."
"Oh, is he a gangster himself?"
"He would have been if it hadn't been for Myrtle. He tried every way to keep him straight."
"Why should you want to keep him straight?"
"For my sake. He's my foster brother. He found out Jimmy was getting mixed up with the Duffy gang, so did all she could to stop him."
"Now, look here, Miss Minter. No girl is going to take any chances getting mixed up with the Duffy for anybody's sake except her own."
"Oh, you don't understand.
Anna, she must have been directly interested in some way. Otherwise, you would have been afraid to have anything to do with him."
"Captain, Myrtle wasn't afraid of anything. And I know she wasn't interested in them."
"Well, now, Miss Minter, we have all the newspapers that told of the time Myrtle Spear disappeared. They made a big event. It was all over the headlines."
"But I think that was only because she was one of the girls from Hayfield's Treasures. As Mr. Arnold said, it made good reading matter for the public."
"Miss Minter, that time Myrtle Spear disappeared, how long was she gone?"
"Well, the papers told all that, Captain."
"Yes, they say she left her apartment with Harry Duffy and couldn't be found that night or all the next day. Then suddenly she turns up in the theater the next night. Ain't that right?"
"Yes, that's right."
"Then there was some cock and bull story that the press agent Fred Hansen put in the paper about her having been out in Forest Hills at his house and her having been sick that night. She never was out there in Forest Hills. Now, you tell me, Miss Minter, where she was that time."
"I don't know, Captain."
"Oh, yes, you do, Miss Minter. Now, come on, tell me. It'll make things easier."
"Oh, I can't tell you, Captain. I promised Myrtle I'd never tell."
"Well, she'll have to tell us sooner or later."
"But, Captain, how could that have any bearing on Mr. Hunt's murder?"
"It's simple. In the clippers we found Hunt's death, we see it sure that he was also mixed up with gangsters."
"You think so?"
"Of course, it's as plain as day. Another motive is citing jealousy. You know, Miss Minter, that Myrtle Spear refuses to tell about Agnes Hallam. I think she had something to do with Hunt and the gang affair."
"Oh, no, Captain, it couldn't be."
"If Mr. Baker was offering a large amount of money to anyone who would know anything about Agnes Hallam, or anyone who would locate her. Now, Miss Minter, would you like to earn that money?"
No, I don't know anything about Agnes Hallam. I don't know who she is or what she could have done."
"Miss Minter, I'm afraid you're not telling the truth."
"I can't answer any more questions, Captain. I'll have to talk to Myrtle's lawyer."
"Oh, Myrtle's lawyer?"
"Yes, Mr. Craig."
"Craig, huh? So you both have the same lawyer.
Well, Myrtle said I didn't need one, but Mr. Craig was advising us both.
He advised you not to talk too much because he knew you could say things about this Agnes Allen?
He doesn't know anything about Agnes Allen.
But you do.
Oh, no, no, Captain. Please don't ask me any more questions today. I just can't say any more.
You shouldn't be talking about it here, huh? Then you may go now. But I'll be pressing you again. Joe, send Theodore here. You go out that way, Miss Minter.
Captain, will you tell Myrtle I'll be waiting for her outside?
Yes, I'll tell her. Sit down, Miss Theodore.
Hi, Captain
Coon. I have here a newspaper, and according to the story here, about a month ago, you disappeared one afternoon and were missing for about 40 hours. Where were you during that time?
In New York City?
Where in New York City?
I can't answer that.
Have you been advised not to?
No. But it had no connection with Hunt's murder. It was entirely a personal affair of my own.
Does anybody besides yourself know where you were?
Yes.
Who?
Jack Arnold knows.
Jack Arnold, eh?
He may or may not tell you about it.
Just, where were you 2 weeks ago tonight?
That was the night Hunt was murdered.
You know the answer well, don't you?
Well, he doesn't by now.
Well, you said before that you came into the theater right after half hour had been called.
Yes, and I told you that I'd been in Mr. Hunt's office and talked to him.
Uh-huh.
I also told you that I came out and talked to Mrs. Hunt. And then I spoke to Pat in his office and then to Vivian. About that time, Margie came up the corridor, and I talked to her for a second. And then we went down to the dressing room. You ought to know it by heart by this time.
Yes, according to your statement, you did all that talking in about 8 minutes.
That's right. You know, I went into the dressing room.
And, let's see, that was when Nell Davis found a gun in Clarence Sittenkirk's pocket. You sort of put it on the shelf.
Yes.
What was the first thing you did when you got in that dressing room?
I took off my street clothes and put on my makeup. And then they called 15 minutes.
How soon after 15 minutes was called did you leave the dressing room?
Yeah, must have been just a couple of minutes, because I just as soon as Clarence gave us the clean white gloves, I went right out.
Did you go directly upstairs?
Yes.
What for?
To see Pat.
What did you want to see him about?
I wanted to ask him if there'd been anyone there asking for Mrs. Hunt. And I told you all about that before.
Did you talk to Pat?
No, he wasn't there.
Was anybody in that corridor when you went up there?
No.
Did you go into Hunt's office?
No.
Was his door open?
It was closed.
Oh, you noticed that. You didn't see the woman Vivian or Mrs. Hunt in the corridor?
No.
When did you see Pat again?
When he was opening the steel door. He was coming from Mr. Darnell's dressing room.
And when was that?
Just about 30 seconds before they called over to us.
And then what?
I saw Mr. Hayfield and Mr. Baker coming across the stage, and I walked over to Hunt's door. Knocked, and no one answered, so I went in.
And you found him dead and in the screen. We all know that by heart, don't we?
Yes, don't
we? You were up in that corridor from the time you left the dressing room, which you say was about 17 minutes after 8, until you found Hunt's body without seeing anybody. Until you saw Pat coming down across the stage.
I didn't say I was up there all the time.
Well, what did you do?
When I came from the dressing room and I found Pat wasn't in his office and nobody in the corridor, stood there for about a second, and then I discovered that the top button on my leather uniform coat was falling off. So I went downstairs again in the sewing room, got a needle and some heavy gray thread and sewed the button on.
And who did you see on the way down?
No one.
Where is the sewing room?
Right next to the 6-6 dressing room at the foot of the stairs.
Did you leave the door open?
No, I closed it.
Why did you close it?
Because I had to take off the coat in order to sew the button on, and I had nothing on under the coat.
Why haven't you told us before?
Well, you never asked me where I was from the time I went upstairs until I saw Pat.
That's given you plenty of time to think up this answer, hasn't it? How long did it take you to sew that button?
From the time I went into the sewing room until I went back upstairs again, when I saw Pat.
You mean to tell me that it takes 12 minutes to sew on a button?
Well, I had to find a needle and thread and take off my coat. And then I looked for a thimble because the needle was large. After I sewed it on, I had to hunt for the scissors to cut the thread. Then I put my coat back on again and put the scissors and things back where I found them.
Kind of neat, eh? And you saw nobody and nobody came in.
That's right.
Well, isn't it generally some sewing woman or this fellow Kitty Tucker or whatever his name is in that room?
Well, they weren't in there at the time. There are 2 sewing girls, but one of them helps dress a couple of the principals, and the other one, Cora, generally helps the sisters.
What do you mean, dresses them?
Well, you hook them up and powder their backs, and there's always a hook or a snap-off that has to be sewn on in the last minute.
So well, no one saw you go downstairs or go into that sewing room, or come out and go up again, eh?
I didn't see anyone.
Then you can't prove it.
No.
Hello. Joe, go over to the theater and get that coat that Merton Steele wears in the letter number. And don't come back without it.
May I go now, Captain?
No, you'll be waiting right here. I'm going to take a look at that top button.
O'Toole is hot on the trail, and he has opened a very important question. Perhaps the examination of the coat Merton uses in the letter number will prove her story is true. We'll see in the next exciting episode of the story of Mert and Marge. This is Andre Ballou speaking.